Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've been talking about the striking workers at Nabisco, five warehouses and plants across the country. And it's about time. This idea that you can work people 60, 70, 80 hours a week and expect them to not want family time and then come back and say, no, we want to give you an alternative schedule where we cheat you out of overtime and all of the things that they're trying to do. Eventually, you push people to where they go, enough is enough. And I think having lived through the pandemic, I think finally a number of working people have gone, screw this. We're going to make some demands that they haven't made in decades. And here to share some thoughts on, what the Nabisco workers are going through and maybe some insight in what's going on, I've asked Jordan Zacharin to come talk with us. Jordan's a media producer over at More Perfect Union. You can follow them at More Perfect US on Twitter, perfectunion.us, their website. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So I think this is a good thing. It's a nationwide strike. You've got hundreds of workers who have finally said, you know what, we've been abused and used while given the name of hero and essential for long enough. Enough is enough. No contract, no snacks.
The great Danny DeVito coined that term. So he got a lot of people interested actually in the Nabisco strike because he got his authentication his blue check mark taken away for time on Twitter. So Danny DeVito did a great job for the working people. And yeah, it's been, it started out in Portland, BCTGM, the workers there, they walked out, like 300, 400, 500 workers there walked out. I think they're in their second or third week at this point. And then the following week, it was folks in Richmond, Virginia. There was another plant there, Richmond. And then the next week it was Chicago. And so I think it was last week it was Chicago. So the three big plants that are remaining there in Nabisco, of course, owned by Mondelez, the gigantic food conglomerate, and then two distribution places, and those are in Georgia and Aurora, Colorado, are also on strike. They're trying to cut off all the supply of Oreos and Chips Ahoy and all that across the country. And I think they are making a dent so far.
No, and I think it's an important one. I think it's now about time that working people say enough. But this has gotten such attention, and people everybody I talk to from those areas are supportive, because when you start hearing about the working conditions, working in 100-plus degree heat all the time, when you hear about the lack of sanitary facilities, 70, 80-hour work weeks mandatory, and now they want to eviscerate the 8-hour day, you go, wait a second, bridge too far.
Yeah, so earlier this year, I think it was in February and March, they shut down two gigantic legacy plants, Mondelez did, and like I said, they own Nabisco, one in Fairlawn, New Jersey, which employed hundreds and hundreds of workers, been there since the 60, 70, 80 years. And a lot of people got laid off. People had worked there their entire careers, just thrown away. They also got rid of a giant plant in Atlanta, or the Atlanta area in Georgia. And again, that was over 1,000 workers who were just, sacrificed after an entire year of being, working there during COVID, during those crazy hours. And so, the folks that are, remaining in those three plants, those three manufacturing places, they have not had a contract. A lot of them, some of them did resolve to have a contract, but a lot of them haven't had a contract since 2016 or something like that. And so they've been working in 2018, they did an impasse. Because they had not come to an agreement, Mondelez just unilaterally froze their pensions. And so all these people now had, 401ks, which were pennies on the dollar compared to what they would get with their pensions. So, we talked to folks who've been working there 30, 40 years, all of a sudden can't retire as they had intended, in their 60s. Now they're, I'm going to be working until my 70s plus. And so all these folks are just sick of it. And, in Chicago especially, they already closed half the plant in 2016, I believe. And so they saw, 300 of the coworkers thrown aside. Some of them eventually got jobs again at the new plant once people, the other half of the plant once people retired and they phased people out. But, lots of people left out in the cold. And I think they're saying, look, you're going to send our jobs to Mexico. That's what you're going for. We're going to get what we can out of you.
No, ultimately, that is the goal. I mean, and I'm never going to buy a Montezuma's Revenge Oreo. That is never going to happen. When they closed the Fairlawn, New Jersey plant, I'm like, you know, when I would pick up a bag and I flip it over to check the label, it better say Fairlawn, New Jersey on it. Now that they've closed it, there's nothing there. I'll never buy another Oreo again unless it's made in the U.S. And I think we, the consumers, have to show our solidarity with these workers by saying, look, we're not going to buy things made in Mexico. You make food here in this country. In fact, it should be much more local. You know, like New Jersey's close enough. Atlanta, I'm sorry, too far away. We need local distribution, local production for local consumption. At least that's my view on it.
Well, you know, between this and Frito-Lay, and, you know, Nabisco makes a whole lot of food, a whole lot of snacks, and, you know, Nabisco's owned by Mondelez, and they do lots of other stuff as well. You know, they have drinks, they have food, they have snacks, and Frito-Lay, of course, owned by PepsiCo. The sheer number of brands and companies they own, if you were to look at the back of your snack or the soda or whatever you're going to buy, in my grocery store here in the city, it's not a huge one. Most of the snacks at this point, you know, if I'm not buying those things, I'm not going to be buying Nabisco and Frito-Lay. Most of the snacks you want to eat, most of the sodas you want to drink, you know, Coca-Cola is not a good corporation either. So I'm sure that'll be out of the question soon enough. It shows you how much corporate consolidation actually controls these markets and how much, you know, when there's no competition, they can move jobs to Mexico or, like you said, get rid of the 8-hour workday. You know, in Nabisco, they want to change, they want to have this alternative schedule where, you know, anything after 8 hours is overtime. You know, you get paid time and a half, and on the weekends you get, you know, two times because you're working a weekend, you're not with your family. They want to change that. They say, oh, we're going to give you more work-life balance by giving you 12-hour workdays without any overtime. You got to pass 40 hours a week to get overtime, so they can work you 3 12-hour days, you know, and then put you off schedule and then make you work a Sunday or something like that. And they're not paying you any overtime. The tens of thousands of dollars it's going to cost people and like their health by working in these horrible conditions, sweating their heads off in places where there's like, you know, one of them said it's like being baked yourself. You know, you're in a bakery, the fans and the AC are on the food. You're being baked just as much. And so between those conditions and the way they've treated the thousands of workers they've already laid off, you know, it shows you how little, until, like you said, the consumer starts taking action as well. It starts saying, I'm not going to buy this stuff. I'm going to go for alternatives. I'm going to go for local stuff. I'm going to try and, you know, eat healthier, I guess, until you treat your workers better. You know, it just shows corporate consolidation has such a huge impact on workers, and we don't have to think about that.
Yeah, now Nabisco is saying, you know, we're doing just fine. Production isn't affected. But I saw a story, and you can help me if it's wrong, but I saw a story out in Portland that a train literally backed up and didn't deliver flour. I don't know how, when a train is willing to back up to not deliver you flour, how production is at normal levels.
Yeah, no, that story, it's an interesting one. And that story is almost correct. So basically what happens is, and I spoke to one of the workers there, they have the train will have to flip a switch to go towards the Nabisco factory, you know, and they saw a picket line, and the workers who are in the union, the train railroad workers, said, we're not going to deliver. We're not going to cross that line. So they changed their route so that they did not throw the switch so that they would just skip over the factory. And so, yeah, the spirit of the story is correct. They are not going to cross the picket line. And apparently Mondelez and Nabisco were not happy that they had people on the picket line on the rail tracks. But I mean, look, these are the people that run this factory. These are the people who know these things. They know how it all goes. They've been the one unloading this stuff for so many years. They knew exactly how to force a stop. And they did that. And, you know, it's been a lot of great solidarity, I think, in Portland and in Chicago and Richmond. I'm just hearing stories. I know in Portland coming up on Saturday, there's going to be a big rally with, you know, some city council folks. And, you know, lots of unions have been coming out, showing solidarity and trying to, you know, the last thing, the big one we covered was in Topeka, Kansas, where, look, you know, union power is not nearly as strong in Kansas, the right to work state. But in Oregon and Portland, I think it's a little bit stronger. There's been a lot of, you know, activist groups that have been out there with them, you know, adding to the picket lines and the size of it and keeping people in solidarity. And so this is definitely going on longer than Frito-Lay did.
No, ultimately, it's going to come down to we, the people, supporting these. And as I said, I am not buying a Nabisco product or a Mondelez product if I can help it. And I do try and check every label I can. I will not knowingly buy any of their products until these folks get a contract. So not just no contract, no snacks, no contract, no nothing I'm staying away from Mondelez stuff entirely. But here's the thing. This is going to be, I think, when we look back at 2021, the year of workers finally saying enough is enough and strikes. You know, I just talked with a woman, a nurse from St. Vincent's up in Worcester, Mass., who they've been on strike for, you know, what seems like forever, back in, since March 8th, I believe. And the community support that they're getting there for a lengthy strike is really incredible. So I think working people are finally waking up. In 2009-10, I was hoping for this moment, but I think now we're really at a moment where people are like, hey, I've worked way too hard for way too long, and I'm still struggling to get by. Enough is enough. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, we've seen, especially folks who are working in the factories who worked through the pandemic, nurses, I mean, how you don't want to help nurses out, how you do not want to, you know, give them their fair share or let them unionize is, you know, beyond me, you know, calling them healthcare heroes and then treating them like nothing, right? And so I think the community, people are seeing that, you know, these people risk their lives to keep the world moving as the rest of us, like, you know, stayed inside because we had to because of the pandemic. And so, you know, look, I'm not, and certainly not in corporate PR, but it certainly is not a good move for all these places to say, hey, healthcare heroes work here, or hey, you know, thank you to our frontline workers, your essential workers who help make these snacks, but also we're not gonna pay you, we're not gonna give you any sort of benefits, we're gonna freeze your retirement, we're going to make it more hell for you. That's not a good look, and I don't know what kind of business strategy that is, but I think people are really seeing this sort of solidarity, people coming together. And you know, everyone was cast aside during the pandemic. You know, like, it was lucky that there were unemployment benefits that, you know, a lot of people didn't get them, but everyone's cast aside during the pandemic. And I think people remember that.
No, I think you're right. I want to get your thoughts on this story that's breaking out of Massachusetts. Evidently, the state has certified a ballot measure, you know, to target gig workers, to ensure that they never become employees. Is that what I'm seeing here?
Yeah, so they're trying to do the, you know, Uber and Lyft, and they're trying to do the whole Prop 22 playbook in Massachusetts. They Prop 22, they tricked or hoodwinked California voters into thinking they were helping gig workers by saying they were going to be guaranteed benefits. Basically just took away the right to be employees, the right to strike, right to, you know, right to negotiate for their own contracts. And so it passed. There's a lot of regret on that. And, you know, it got invalidated by a court saying that this is, you know, you can't just put a limit on this. You can't, they tried in California, it would take 7/8 of the legislature to repeal it, which is almost impossible. And so that was, you know, in California right now, that's been invalidated. Trying to do it in Massachusetts, trying to run that playbook again, hopefully, and, you know, More Perfect Union certainly working on this. There's a bit more savviness and, you know, community awareness of it in that sort of thing. They paid $200 million in California, Lyft and Uber and Instacart and DoorDash to make that happen there. You know, it's incumbent, I think, upon the Biden NLRB that's going to be trying, and, you know, they're going to be enforcing things a lot more. They've got, you know, great new general counsel. And I think Department of Labor, I think it's, you know, at some point, I mean, look, they haven't done much lately, right? Maybe there'll be some elements of the PRO Act and reconciliation, but it's going to take, I think, some federal power, some federal intervention to avoid all these places getting these things on the ballot. Because, you know, if they can do it in California and, you know, got Massachusetts, it's not going to be a problem to get it done in Florida, in Ohio, and all these other places.
No, it's an excellent point. But, you know, I sit and I look at the sums of money that these companies spend. You know, Uber and Lyft, those companies, you know, came up with $200 million to run their campaign there. Amazon spent $200 million to break that contract, the election vote there in Bessemer. This hospital in Massachusetts has spent already in excess of $100 million to deny workers safe staffing levels. If there's all this money to deny workers basic rights and basic safety, isn't there money to help pay them better wages and to make safer working conditions? Or is it really just all about power and control?
I mean, I think it's about power and control. You know, you don't want a rolling stone to gather moss. You know, they do not want They do not want to create this sort of momentum, and they do not want to be stuck in negotiations with people going forward. If you unionize, it's not just the first contract, right? It's, you know, the contract after that, after that, after that. It's, you know, retirement. It's all those things. So I guess they see it as like a one-time payment, you know, one-time, a gigantic payment, and it says a lot that they have that money to just splash out. But it's certainly all about power. I think it's the same thing with the, you know, Democrats and the filibuster. If, you know, it's not just about rescuing democracy to them. It's about or you know, passing the PRO Act, it's about, oh, all of a sudden people will be able to demand more progressive change. And we don't want to let that, we don't want to open the door to that. And I think that's exactly what's happening with these, you know, anti-union campaigns.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of doing away with the filibuster and only having them in the old school thought process. You know, I still remember Mr. Smith goes to Washington. If you want a filibuster, you get your jug, you get your lozenges, you hit the floor, and you hold it as long as you want. If it's really that important, keep telling me why you're against whatever it is. If it's the minimum wage, tell me why you think people should work for a buck an hour. Tell me how you think that's going to help the economy. If you're against the right of workers to organize, hold the floor and tell me why. Or just read the phone book. I don't care. But if it's that important, you should have to have some kind of act. You shouldn't be able to just go, yeah, what? I've decided no.
Right. I mean, it's lazy is really what it is. And the fact that Democrats are allowing it to happen. It's not about, you know, preserving Senate comity. It's not about preserving traditions. It's not about that. It's they do not want, you know, I was talking to one Democratic lawmaker about this who's on the progressive side saying they just do not want, you know, they do not want this opportunity for people, for progressive activists to say, hey, look, now do this, now do this, now do this. You know, if Biden was to get rid of student debt, then what happens to medical debt, right? And so I think that this is about power in the same way it is about power with the unions, with and Prop 22. You know what I mean? They are trying to preserve this sort of power structure. And until, you know, there's enough, I mean, we saw all those Democrats trying to destroy the reconciliation bill, right? They, just because they have a D next to their name doesn't mean that they're on the side of working people. And so it's about taking power. And I think working people and you know, union members are understanding that more than ever.
Yeah, I've always been harder on Democrats than I have been on Republicans, because I believe Democrats should be better and know better. But, you know, the major labor law reform that I had hoped for through my lifetime, going back to Carter, and the possibility of undoing Taft-Hartley, Bill Clinton and the strike replacement, Barack Obama and the Employee Free Choice Act. They've always found a way to screw it up, and I've always been harder on them because I expect attacks from Republicans. I expect them to be the voice of corporate America, and they never let me down. Democrats often do.
Yeah, it's like when a parent or a teacher you say, "Why are you being harder on me?" And it's because they expect more out of you. You know, they can have all this pro-worker rhetoric, even with abortion rights. You know, they can say, "Oh, look, we're going to fight for Roe v. Wade," but until you expand the Supreme Court, until you get rid of the filibuster, until you actually fight the fight, you know, that's, you know, just fundraising.
Boy, you are so spot on. But Jordan, I appreciate the time and the work that you guys do over there at More Perfect Union. Incredible videos. I hope folks will go to your Twitter page. More Perfect US is the Twitter handle. We'll get links out on social media. I can follow the work they do there. Also go to their website, perfectunion.us. We'll get that out as well. Jordan, I appreciate you taking some time. Keep up the great work you guys do.
Much appreciated. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Jordan Zacharin, media producer there at More Perfect Union. Check out the website, perfectunion.us. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.